It's a pleasure to be here. I'm falling asleep because I had a late night. No fault of my own, of course. And I sat for ages yesterday wondering, how am I going to deal with this today? I ended up making 10 recordings of one song. And they were all slightly different from each other. And it was reminded me of what my mentor did, drummer Peter Cook here, who I met in the early days of School of Scottish Studies, who'd written the first article that dealt seriously with an area which had never been properly addressed, and that was the context of Peebles. And he, Peter, looked at a particular song and all different versions of the pipe versions of it to see what we could learn from this. In retrospect, I think what people learned was how much they had ignored the context of the Peebles tradition. And it was on account of Peter's article that I started asking questions, because when I was, I'd asked many questions earlier when I was about 17 and 18, I smelt something was wrong. Something was far wrong with the Peebles tradition. I wasn't sure what it was. It just didn't seem right. So it was a number of years later before I got the opportunity to address it and to answer the questions for myself. And I did an analysis of some pieces of music, some Peebles, with certain songs that were known to have a relationship with the melody. And of course, the songs often had, because they had travelled, a lot of them had changed in a non-progression. Whereas in the Peebles tradition, things were frozen, as if a camera shot had been taken of the earliest records from 1760 and 1820 onwards, and everything had become sacrosanct. And so I guess that's the difference between classical music and traditional music. Yeah, when they say in traditional music about classical musicians, where we wait in great expectation of a tune breaking out. So basically what I was doing was looking for the tune and looking for the rhythm. I think it was the late Professor Tovey in Edinburgh University who said, music without rhythm is like a filleted fish. And I think that kind of summed up modern Peebles performance to me, because I got very bored with it, and I found myself going onto a platform and going through some motions, and then putting up with people arguing about the relevance of the grace note or something, or of course it just didn't make sense, and it clearly doesn't make any sense now. I don't know how much of you know anything about the background to Peebles, or have you listened and given up, or listened and found another, or listened out of politeness. I think it summed up one of the Blair Castle competitions, and this lady was asked at halftime what she thought of the morning competition in Peebles, and she said, "Wonderful," she says, "absolutely wonderful, so good, I fell asleep." And I thought, that kind of sums up a lot of what people do. It's this kind of landscape of sound, this sort of ambience, this nice place to go. It's sort of music therapy. Here in the community. So So what I want to do is just I'll briefly outline what the problems I perceived were. A bit like when they started notating Peabrach, the first publication in 1819-20. It's a bit like James Hogg's mother said when he started notating the border of ballads. And she said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm writing out songs I've been collecting." And she said, "That's the end of the song." And it's a bit like that with Peabrach. It's been pushed into onto a page and surrounded and put behind bars. So really, one of the most influential pieces. I'm pretending I've got notes here. That's them. And there's lots of these. So, then it looks good when you look at the notes. So, one of the most influential texts was that of Joseph MacDonald, who was a very young man when he died in India, 23 years old, and he partially notated, giving an idea of the music that was being played at the time, and very basic little fragments, but it said so much. It told me a lot about how it was played, and then when you see what happened afterwards and how it was notated, it became very clear to me. Once I took the words of melodies that were closely associated, and once I put the words over the music, it was very clear then. It was very clear to see what had happened. And one of the first improvements, I guess, is what that was the buzz, improving the classic melodies, was to make them less, all these decorations, which we call introductions. They were Joseph MacDonald had these very interesting runs down to, and it cruises to the theme of note. And there may have been five notes, may have even been more notes than he'd ever notated. But basically, the idea is that for me, it was clear that this influence would appear to have come from the harp tradition. There's an old Gaelic saying, Clarsere and Janafurst, I guess Pipere and Nunnefurst. The harp player of the old tune and the piper of the one tune. And I think some of these decorations, what happened was that they were in the first publication of Piping, they were reduced to a three note decorations, like something like this. I'll give you an example in a tune that some say was taken from, it was a variant of a Northumbrian piece called Kathleen Ferrier's song called Blow the Wind Southerly. It's been rooted in our history in Scotland since the 1600s, and with different titles. And it's a very, very popular melody, a strong melody. I've got a problem here. I seem to have taken the wrong gizmo connecting piece to my pipes. That's probably in Ireland somehow. Anyway.
Do you need some thread?
It might just... okay, I think. So Joseph McDonald had these interesting runs into the melody. So he might for something like this. And through time, throughout the 19th century, they became longer and longer and longer. The pivotal middle note, E, became elongated. By the 20s, by the 1940s, so this century, this source here, Kilbelly book, is the very popular book because it's easy to read the whole tune on one page. By this time, this decoration had become part of the melody line. And so, and the music had slowed down considerably, and the rhythm, of course, because of these, many of these decorations were elongated decorations in the form of E single notes. I think it's the other way, actually.
Oh, is it? I'm sorry.
Thank you. these notes became elongated. So with the slowing down, elongation of note, and the lack of a clear identification of phrase, normally in a pibroch, I'm thinking normally, normally in music, you know. Generally, most of them are made phrases of music. So in each phrase, you'll have four pulses, a bit like the chanson, or the song. Some of them have five. Some of the longer tunes have maybe 16 phrases or 12 phrases. But generally, you'll get eight phrases. And the first thing I do is identify the phrase and play through the phrase, just as you would be doing reading a piece of poetry or singing a song. So I'll give you an example of using this tune called Botik na Brikish or Manahanig Linya. Botik na Brikish, the old man with the trousers, or the women of the glen. This melody was used by Robert Burns on a couple of occasions. I think Sweetest Me and Merry Hey I Didn't Tease and a Heckle. He used the same melody for both. Beethoven used it, etc., etc. Anyway, I'll play the manner in which one would hear it today on the competition platform, the recognized correct way. I'll then sing a fragment, I'll croak a fragment. I'll either drink a witty. I'll sing a fragment of the song and then I'll play the reinterpretation of the tune in light of the evidence of the the rhythm of the song. And I hope you'll notice the difference. And I'm leaving now. Thank you. Thanks, Doug. Basically, many years ago, when I wrote on that and studied, I've been teaching it for 17 years in Epping Centre, part of the music course. But unfortunately, they were too scared to play this because they felt that maybe we wouldn't get enough points in their exams. So unfortunately, the whole competition system is still running the course. So it hasn't really moved along the same way as I thought it would. But I think things are changing. I think it takes time. Because a lot of people consider that the change is far too dramatic for them to be able to take on board. I simply look at it, I ask the simple question, if you played Píbrach and it was handed down orally, using that Caldrop is one way, but then the people just sang it. So you would hear a tune, you would hear the ground or theme of a tune, and I would say to the students when they arrived the first week, I would say, well, I expect you to have the ground, the theme, off in some 5 minutes, some 15 minutes, maximum half an hour for most pieces. You should be able to learn it in half an hour. And the looks I got were quite amazing because, you know, they're brought up to believe as one writer on a competing paper wrote about Peter Calmore and said, you know, it takes up to 2 weeks to a month or whatever to get the tune into your head, and up to 2 years before it becomes automatic, I think was the word. And I thought, God forbid, this poor music. Of course, this music was handed on orally, so it really had to have a melody. It had to have rhythm. It had to have something memorable for it to be transmitted down over the centuries. And I agree more and more with Mrs. Hogg's mother. By looking at the tunes that have clear associations with words, and I did state that if you're looking for the genuine version of a melody, then I'm talking about looking back over a long period of time, all good melodies change. But once they have words wrapped around them, they're less likely to change so much, I believe. And I think that the association of words really keeps so many of these melodies in place and keeps them from changing so much, certainly in a rhythmic way. So you'll have a melody with maybe three or four different sets of texts associated with them, but the melodic rhythm will generally remain the same. I don't have any. I think it's so obvious to me that conservatism would actually occur with so many of these tunes. So one of them being with the start of the competition system from the late 1700s on, where you had these wonderful some of the writers writing about these events in Edinburgh, where this wild piper would be marching around and the women wailing in the middle of the tune. It all seems a bit dramatic. But the music obviously was far more animated than that which is played today. And some of them, as the late Mr. Johnson, what's his first name? who wrote about Edinburgh in the 18th century. And he had to look at Peter's tradition and had this comment to say, he said, a lot of them were built on common or garden tunes. And then they were developed and variations added on from this common or garden tune. And so that kind of made sense when I noticed in one of the publications of Angus Mackay, there was a Peebach there that had never been published by anyone. But I think it was because it was too much of a common or garden tune that kind of... And this was a tune called Gashin of Atmore, We Will Take the High Road, which was a ruse de guerre in the 1600s in the Montrose Wars, as the Stuarts of Appin were heading off to fight with Montrose and pretending that they weren't. So singing songs which suggested they were fighting with the government, because they were in Campbell country. And so this tune, I don't know how they ever got into London and called, they called it London Bridge is Falling Down. I don't know where it appeared for that to happen. I've never researched that any further. Anyway, it appears like this in Mackay, so. It doesn't appear in any of the list of piping competitions from Peebach to Blair. But it's there, it's a Peebach. It's interestingly, the tune you were playing earlier, what's it called? Oh dear, what can the matter be? Peter, we haven't come around with a term yet to deal with this idea of a variant, close variant. So I thought first and second cousins was good enough. Another intriguing one was a one called Last Year or the Finger Lock, and it's interesting how. What someone may comment or write upon at one period of time lasts so long that people were still stating in the 1990s that this people called a glass via or the finger lock, which has a very esoteric title, and it has stories associated with the fairy roller. Maybe that made it even more esoteric, and the story became that this was one of the most difficult people to play. Quoted a journalist in 1782, I think, or something, in the Scots magazine, said Last Fear or Finger was one of the most difficult people. And I heard someone saying that in 1990. So it's amazing how it's a bit like Dr. Johnson when he said the best English in the country is spoken in Inverness. And you still go to Inverness and they'll turn at you and say, all right, best English is in Inverness. So these things hold. And this one was the late Colonel David Murray said to me once, I don't understand, he said, why this tune, the finger of yours? It was on the list of the 74th Regiment as a reveille. And how could such a boring slow tune be used as a reveille? I said, well, it's something to do with how it's delivered. And I found a set of words in a Gaelic magazine dating back to the 1870s or 80s. And it was strange enough, someone from my own village called MacDonald, who had put the words, it was said that he wrote the words, but I think it was a sort of burlesque that the soldiers had on hearing a piper, probably sounding like a pet shop on fire at 6 a.m, waking them up. And of course, what do you do but hear a retort in some way or other as a soldier? And so these words, very esoteric as well, the words go all, 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 which means drink, 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 till you're very drunk. And so a whole set of verses about how they would drink their kilts, their gaiters, their bonnets, and anything they ever saw. So this was, and strangely, it's kind of like a bugle. I had, unfortunately, brought up myself with the bugle going off in the morning at Queen Victoria School. And so it seemed quite appropriate that the Glasmere should be used as a reveille. So I'll play it first of all the way one should play it, and then I'll give a little of the song, and then the reinterpretation based on the evidence of the song.
Thank you.
I could carry on with the variations. So a much more animated piece. And the bugle is like da 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 da. It's like a bugle, if my memory is right. Another interesting one might be, well, from a close study of 12 pieces or so, but from this, was able to extrapolate and apply the same principles to the whole tradition. And so it was very, well, it was very exciting because, as I said, good tunes, you know, they go through this very, very, I think it's very efficient oral tradition where if it's memorable, it'll carry on. If it's not, it'll die. So a lot of these tunes are, when you get the melodies and the rhythms out of them, they're some beautiful pieces. I did record one, I might just play you a bit of it recently in a band called Homeward Journey, and I put vocals over the top of it. It's the part Tiberach, number two, and I changed it a little bit and I kept what we call the other important motifs that changed, that I saw had changed, were all the, what they call the echo beats today. So what had been a one stress figure became a two-stress figure. So there was an extra beat put into the music, which again had a great effect on the whole delivery. This is the part Tiberach number two. So I kept these, they become single in the second. There's only one from the second line onwards, but I kept them as double. It's just because I had a vocal group singing over the top. So it's something like this.